560 WVOX.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the Sons of the American Legion radio report on WVOX AM 1460 and heard around the world on WVOX.com. This is Jack McGuirk along with Ken Tracer bringing you this half hour of discussion of issues related to veterans and the active military. Now, here's Ken.
Good afternoon. And Charles, now, you are the president of the New York City Amateur Radio Emergency Communication Services, an organization that has really helped during some moments of crisis in New York City, and then also with several of the large events in the city, like the marathons and the triathlons. Tell our audience a little bit about what your organization is.
Okay, well, our organization is a volunteer group composed of amateur radio operators who have a keen sense of giving back to their community, but also in working with some of the charity organizations and some of the events like you discussed, the triathlon and the marathon and such, is a way for us to practice so that when there is a time of need that the communications infrastructure has been either severely damaged or is overloaded, that our members know what they have to do to provide that backup communication. And it could be for anybody. It could be for a government agency. It could be for an NGO like the Red Cross or Salvation Army. It could be any level of government. It could be local, it could be federal, it could be state. It's just a matter of people take the skills that they have, fine-tune it a little bit more, and then put it into practice.
And I know your organization jumped in on 9/11 when cell phones largely busied out in New York City. Tell us a little bit about the equipment and how it differs from perhaps cell phones or regular landline phones and so on.
Well, anything that's of a commercial nature has an inherent infrastructure. Whether it be landlines or cell phones, they all have to go back through the phone company through some type of network, whether it be a radio or landline network. If that gets disrupted at any point, then that part of the network will no longer be operating. Now, for example, let's even look at the blackout that we had that covered the entire Northeast in 2003, in August. The cell phones themselves, the towers, were still operational as long as the batteries were working, but all the channels that they were allocated were filled either by everybody trying to call home, or some of the channels are reserved for government use. So the average person had a very difficult time getting through. And then when the batteries finally collapsed, then none of it worked. But the amateur radio infrastructure, so to speak, is a non-infrastructure. It's point-to-point. It's individuals that we can change frequencies whenever we want across all sorts of different bands from shortwave up to microwave. We can go individually, we have our own repeater systems. We even have our own amateur radio satellites.
Wow, what is the equipment? I mean, I'm looking at my cell phone here, right, my desk, and we know about landline cell. What is the equipment that someone would need to be able to participate in this?
Well, for basic local use, you're looking at a handheld radio, which is really not that much bigger than your average cell phone today. In fact, my wife, who is also an amateur radio operator, has a cell phone that has an amateur radio built into it. So with the marvel of today's technology and, I guess, cheap Chinese labor or whatever, they are able to make things quite small. If you have a home station for VHF and UHF bands, the size of the radio is no bigger than a couple of paperback books. And, of course, if you want to talk around the world using shortwave frequencies, the size of the radio is not that much bigger than a very small DVD player or VCR.
Okay, now, your organization, and we're talking with Charles Hargrove, who's the president of the New York City Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Service Program. Tell us a little bit more about some of the organizations and events that you've jumped in and been able to help them with communications.
Well, over the past 30 years, our members have been working with all sorts of different groups, either with the Red Cross opening up shelters during a storm, a nor'easter, a blizzard, We've worked with New York City OEM as part of their Races organization. Started when Mayor Giuliani put that together back in the mid-1990s. Jerry Hauer was the first OEM director. He's now head of the New York State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services. So we've worked with them for any type of civil emergency, including 9/11 and the blackout. We've worked with Salvation Army when they had to open up a couple of locations. We had some of our members with Red Cross on major fire runs in Brooklyn and Manhattan over the years.
Okay.
So it depends. Wherever their need is, then they ask for help.
Okay. Now, tell our audience how they could get in touch with you or learn more about it. Do you have a website?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let me just throw out one piece of information. A lot of people think of amateur radio in the old sense, that you need Morse code and need to build a big tower in your backyard. That has changed completely, and the FCC has dropped the requirement for Morse code completely. So you don't have to worry about learning Morse code. But you can get in touch with us. Our website is www.nyc-arecs.org. And to send us an email is info@nyc-arecs.org.
Well, that's great. I'm sure there's a lot of young people who like to get involved, and I'm sure if they simply type in New York City Amateur Radio, they would reach you and your organization, find more information about how to get involved. Now, one thing, we cover the military here and veterans, and you told me a very interesting story about being a military parent, that you have two daughters that have had extraordinary service in our military. Tell our audience about the military experience of your daughters.
Well, I have four daughters, and the two oldest ones were involved in the Curtis High School ROTC program here on Staten Island where I live. And on their own, they each decided to sign up with two different branches of the military, one with the Army, one with the Marine Corps. And this was a year before 9/11. And when that happened, when 9/11 happened, they were glad that they were in there able to do their part. My oldest daughter served three tours, one in South Korea and two in Iraq. She is now out and going to college. The second oldest daughter, she is still in the Marine Corps. She's a sergeant out of Camp Pendleton.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's extraordinary service. What is it like for you being a military parent, having two daughters in the military, one of whom was overseas quite extensively?
Well, I'm happy to say that they chose the path for themselves, and we support them completely. I had an uncle who served in Vietnam when I was about 8 years old, so we were, you know, growing up expecting to hear word from those in the war zone. So when it came to the point that my daughter was over there, we knew the certain limitations, what she can and cannot say. We always prayed for her safety and the success of the mission, and things had just to work out. So we're proud of them.
Charles, we've got to go. That's Charles Hargrove. Charles, we'll have you back. Thank you very much for calling in our show today.
Sure. No problem, Ken.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX.